For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
We looked at, we just kind of touched, lightly touched, the practice of Zazen. If you remember, Chung Lu said, before you sit down, generate the wish of great compassion and benefiting all beings, not just moi, yourself. And then we looked at the Emei Juku Kanongyo, which is this dedication and invocation of keeping in mind the great bodhisattva of compassion, day and night in mind. All those hands up there have implements to care for, heal, support beings. And I think those hands have little eyes to see what people need. Keeping this in mind. And today, well, we have kind of a whopper, you know, big whopper of the Avatamsaka Sutra, the great flower adornment sutra called the flower ornament scripture. Goes by many names in translation and been translated up and down Asia and flew over to us. The full name in English is something like the Great Extensive Buddha's Flower Adornment Scripture. And we're going to focus on just one tiny chapter, but a famous one today, chapter 11. It's called Purifying Practices, and don't let that freak you out. But it's also called pure conduct. I'll talk about purity just a tiny bit, but always from the stance of non-dualism. So this is not a kind of purity that shames what we talk about in Buddhism. It's a purity that liberates. So this collection, I've always, you know, many times I've thought, what's up with this? Like, how did this come to be? Who was writing this? By candlelight or oil lamp or, you know, together with many people, tripping on some kind of hallucinogen? I don't know. I don't know. Nobody seems to know. But it seems to have found its way, you know, from India, you know, maybe 500 or so years after Buddha's birthday. So like, I don't know, like 2,000 years ago? I don't know, long time ago. And then it got sort of crafted over time. And then it plopped down here like a spaceship. You know, it landed in our laps thanks to the great translator, Thomas Cleary, who many people will argue with. But he's written something in this translation that inspires many people, even if it's not always to the letter. Maybe that's my middle name, not always to the letter. Little deviation, always from a non-dual perspective, I hope, but can never fully achieve. So this is about embodying the awareness and activity and action and relational qualities of someone called a great bodhisattva or a being who awakens for the benefit of all. This whole thing is about that. It's a bodhisattva training manual, part 0.0001. Like, it's just a tiny little droplet of teachings that support awakening for the benefit of all beings. There's some other good ones that are like smaller whoppers that are available that are teachings given to us. And we make it alive in our own practice with each other today. So that's my little preamble. It appeared in China around the 5th century in translation. And, you know, this flower garland, you know, I think of like a Hawaiian lei, you know, like flowers strung together, but these flowers are adornments of Buddhist teachings. And these flowers are flowers that reseed and grow on our cushions. And when they grow on your cushion, somebody like Hogetsu comes along and snips them and puts them on the altar. Something like that. So coincidentally, soon, but maybe not soon enough for you, we will celebrate Buddha's birthday, which is known as serendipitously, and this wasn't planned by me, but as the flower festival, Hanamatsuri in Japanese, in Japan. And it's celebrated in different ways all over the place. But we, in our family style, we celebrate Buddha's coming into the world, awakening, being birthed every moment with flowers. So, you know, you saw us fussing around, several of us hovering around the altar, putting flowers on there. There's some flowers from the garden, some, what are those? Hyacinths, I forget. But anyway, from, do you know what those are, Wade? Those white ones? They're hyacinths, right? Yeah. Just seeing your moment here. But those come from the garden. They're very fragrant. The other flowers were offerings from Jewel. The Jewel store down the road, not to be confused with the other jewels in the jeweled necklace of the Buddhist teachings, which are also symbols of the wonderful adornments of the Buddha. And these flowers, you know, represent blessings of gratitude for the Dharma. And this isn't Dharma or teaching, just limited, in my opinion, to Shakyamuni Buddha, but the Dharma, the teachings we offer each other from being in community, the teachings of this native land that we're supported by, and of many places that help us return to our true nature, remember who we really are, despite who people might have told us we are or who we tell ourselves we are. These are flowers of homecoming. They also traditionally represent unique Buddhist practices. So in this vast world of emptiness, the phenomenal world, flowers expressing Buddha nature, Buddha-ness. And so they represent this splendor of the phenomenal world from the viewpoint of boundless non-duality. So it's just fine to experience wonder, joy, and splendor. Now, look at these beautiful, you know, adornments we have at this little old Chicago 2-flat. It's okay to experience that, even kind of good, but don't crave it or grasp it. The minute you want more or less of it, of anything, you're kind of stuck in quicksand. So the flowerful joy of Buddhist teachings and practices is not graspable. They're not graspable. But our practices to offer adornments and blessings to all beings to free them from suffering. And of course, we're included in that all being category. So I think it's really quite nice to open up this flower adornment of Avatamsaka teaching today on Buddha's birthday. But Buddha likes it. Hogetsu likes it. And, you know, our practice in this cloud, on this ground, in this assembly, is a bodhisattva flower garland. Isn't this wild how we're like all sort of in this garlandy shape? Can't quite make a circle online, but I can imagine it is oval. Oval. And I think that I will never be able to appreciate how much these teachings of the flower ornament, flower adornment sutra influences our family style of Soto Zen practice and the philosophy, the massive philosophy of Hua Yan or flower ornament teachings are baked into almost everything we do. Remember that verse? The unsurpassed, profound, and wondrous Dharma, said to originate from Empress Wu in China, in Japan, in the 7th century, as she was being taught the Flower Ornament Sutra and had a teacher who was a YN teacher, she spoke these words of praise for that teaching. This has 39 books, and, you know, every one is a cornucopia of different paths, practices, and meditative awarenesses available to bodhisattvas, starting from like pre-bodhisattvas, maybe all the way up to like level 10. It's like video game. You level up your bodhisattva game. But just the fact that you're here is already enough bodhisattva practice. So this book 11 has a setting, an assembly of bodhisattva peoples listening, and all sorts of celestial people and whatever shows up, I guess, is listening to the Buddha teach at some kind of like cosmic site of a light awakening, the Bodhimanda, which is the site of awakening. But this Bodhimanda in this book exists in some kind of multiverse. You know, it's all over the place, everywhere, all at once. Buddha's teaching to these assemblies. So it already asks us to imagine and go beyond our limited thinking. I'm not saying it asks us to believe in some woo-woo stuff, but I think this encouragement to be like, you know, things aren't quite what I always think they are with my grasping brain already invites us to do that. So what's happening at the beginning of this is the great bodhisattva of wisdom, Manjushri, who usually sits on our altar on a lion, but is hanging out someplace else right now because we have baby Buddha. The altar gets crowded. But Manjushri, the great bodhisattva of wisdom, is in conversation with another bodhisattva called Chief in Knowledge, Chief Knowledge, or Foremost in Wisdom. And they're continuing a conversation that they had in the previous chapter. And I love the fluidity in this sutra. You know, at one minute there's Buddha, but then somebody else's is kind of Buddha, and then they switch roles and somebody else is asking questions and answering this kind of fluxy thing, this Dharma inquiry between Manjushri and this chief in knowledge. And this is paralleled, ironically, will be. So we'll have a Dharma inquiry ceremony for Shuso, Jerry, and we'll be able to ask her questions, just like what goes on in this sutra. So I'm going to read the beginning because I think it's great to think about the context of this. And it begins with a page and a half of questions from just to get warmed up, you know. It says, then the bodhisattva chief in knowledge asked bodhisattva Manjushri, how can bodhisattvas attain faultless physical, verbal, and mental action? How can they attain harmless physical, verbal, and mental action? How can they attain blameless physical, verbal, and mental action? How can they attain invulnerable physical, verbal, and mental action? I'll just stop and comment here. By being completely vulnerable, completely open. But the questions go on, you know. How can they attain unpolluted physical, verbal, and mental action? How can they attain physical, verbal, and mental action that's guided by wisdom? How can they attain birth in appropriate places among good people, physically complete with full mindfulness, understanding, completeness in conduct, fearlessness, and awareness? It's already kind of saying, think about who you hang out with and who might support this kind of way of being. I'm fast-forwarding a little bit, but I'll just say some more. How can they attain skill in analyzing the psychophysical elements and organs, skill in analyzing interdependent origination, skill in analyzing the realms of desire, form, and formlessness, and skill in understanding the past, present, and future. And then it goes on to say some things kind of familiar to us, to some of us at least. How can they attain emptiness, signlessness, and wishlessness? This is, of course, almost like semiotics or something, but like, you know, not being stuck in our ideas and concepts and reification of things. That's just one quick gloss. And here's another. How can they fulfill the means of transcendence? Generosity, precepts, patience or tolerance, effort or energy, meditation and wisdom. So these are the six paramitas. I think you'll recognize these. And then they come to how can they fulfill kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. These are the four measurables, the Brahmaviharas, sort of loving kindness practice. That's what they're referring to here as kindness. I love this one. How can they attain the power of knowledge, and what is so and what is not? The power of knowledge of the consequences of past, present, and future acts. How can they always gain protection and support of celestial kings, dragon kings, etc.? How can they be a reliance, a support, and a supreme benefactor for all sentient beings? So this question's, you know, and I've kind of edited a lot of it. But it's like, teach me. There's already somebody who's been practicing, you know, incalculable eons. And Manjushri says to Chief in Knowledge, excellent, child of Buddha. You've asked this out of the desire to benefit many, to bring peace to many, out of care for the world, to gladden celestial and human beings. And celestial might mean like tree spirits or star spirits or moon spirits. I don't know. So that they can remain on the path of the Buddhas of past, present, and future, cut off all evil and fulfill all good. And then he ends with, so how can they use their minds so as to attain all supreme sublime qualities? So that's Manjushri bringing forth that question, right? And what follows are pages of four-line verses called gathas that are these verses of basically wishing well-being to all, loving kindness to all. But we actually, you know, I brought the official Sotoshu manual just to show you how baked in these are, these verses. So remember this gatha that we chanted, given to us by Empress Wu, who's kind of Avatamsaka adjacent, was four lines. It's a very common way. But here are lines from the sutra itself. I take refuge in Buddha. May all beings embody the great way, resolving to awaken. I take refuge in Dharma. May all living beings enter the teachings, wisdom like an ocean. I take refuge in Sangha or community. May all beings support harmony in the community, free from hindrance. Is that familiar to anyone? Where does that come from? Where do you hear this? So when we, somebody else have, what did you say, the morning?
We chanted.
Yeah, so we chanted, we begin our service on Mondays with the repentance verse, and then we chant the refuges. Did you have a comment, Wade? So, I take refuge in Buddha, bong, before all beings. Immersing body and mind deeply in the way, ding, awakening true mind. We also chant it when we do the Bodhisattva precept remembrance ceremony. It's a slightly different translation. And I like the Soto shoes because we say before all beings, but this is may all beings. And it's just slightly different in this sutra. Let's see what they have to say. But it's, you know, may all beings this wish that no matter what we're doing, offering incense, stepping into the sendo, changing a diaper, baking cake, interacting with a computer, it is all this blessing and offering. That's the bodhisattva practice. That's a different mind state, right? Than like yelling at somebody when they cut you off on the road. Unless you offer that for the benefit of all beings. Sincerely, completely. I'm sorry, but I need to say this to you to get your attention. Get out of my way. Something like that. But, I'm sticky. Get away from me. So I say this because we chant and we chant very little here, but when we do some of these things repetitively, chants and verses, we often don't know where they come from. But how, you know, we think Dogen is the only source of Soto Zen, but it's so vast and amazing. And the sutra is so vast and amazing. So I was just going to look and see what they say about the, Here the verse is translated, taking refuge in Buddha, they should wish that all beings, so this other translation is may all beings. This is a bodhisattva should wish, should desire, should vow, you could say, that all beings continue the lineage of the Buddhas, conceiving the unexcelled aspiration. Then it goes on and says, taking refuge in Dharma, or taking refuge in the teachings, they should wish that all beings enter deeply into the scriptures and their wisdom be as deep as the sea. So like, that all beings includes someone who might not appear to have much wisdom at this point, like maybe somebody running our country, but we still wish may they enter deeply into the true teaching and may their wisdom be as deep as the sea. Taking refuge in the community, bodhisattvas should wish that all beings order the masses. That's an interesting phrase. All becoming free from obstruction. So that's helping people get it together. That's how I would get it together, people. And then this goes on, you know, and on and on. And I don't want to bore you, and I know everybody wants to offer some flowers to the baby Buddha and drip some water on his beautiful head. But it just goes on, like when entering the meditation hall, bodhisattvas should wish that all beings cause all good principles to bloom and see their true character. Sitting up straight in zazen, they should wish that all beings sit on the seat of enlightenment, their minds without attachment, sitting cross-legged, or in a chair or on a cushion. They should wish that all beings have firm and strong roots of goodness and attain the state of immovability. This is not a state that you don't move during zazen, but when you move, it's a movement of benefiting all beings without disturbing a speck of dust. And it goes on, when putting on your clothes, when going to the toilet, they should wish that all beings reject greed, hate, and delusion and clean away evil. When taking up a bowl, could be the begging bowl, they should wish that all beings perfect the vessel of truth. Seeing ugly people, they should wish that all beings be able to know the blessings of the Buddha and enlightening beings. Seeing good-looking people, they should wish that all beings always have pure faith in the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. If they see a king, they should wish that all beings become kings of the truth, always expounding beneficial, upright teaching. Seeing people with conscience, they should wish that all beings act with distinction. I think they mean with modesty and cover their organs. That's interesting. So this, you know, is really pretty amazing. And soon we're going to circumambulate, and it says circling the shrine or the stupa. They should wish that all beings act without offense and attain perfect wisdom. Circling the shrine or stupa thrice, they should wish that all beings diligently see the Buddha's path without indolence of mind. So this purification is about what our minds and attention and awareness, what is the shape, state, and color of that, you might say. Think of your mind when you contemplate things like this, when you go to sleep and when you wake up, when you interact with a device, when you talk to your partner or to the grocery store person, support person, when you walk your dog, and think of other options. When our mind is filled with a lack of abundance and fear and delusion, this says, you know, when going to sleep at night, these bodhisattvas should wish that all beings attain physical ease and undisturbed minds. And just, you know, oops, you can see there's a lot going on. This book's been seen better days. But just to read a couple more that are the verses. So this is when you live in a monastic setting, there's signs around. Like you go to the bathhouse, if people have been to Tassajara, you go to the bathhouse, you take your shoes off, and you offer incense, and there's a little picture of monks bathing. It's a great story of monks being enlightened in the bathhouse. But this verse that you chant, you offer incense, and it is bathing the body. May all living beings be clean in body and mind, pure and shining within and without. So every day when you go, you can have a little altar by your bathroom. And before you step into the shower, wish that. Holding the toothbrush, may all living beings attain the true Dharma and be naturally pure and clean. Brushing teeth in the morning, I vow with all beings to care for my teeth that bite through afflictions. Snack. Washing the face, I vow with all beings to attain the pure Dharma gate and be forever undefiled by my selfishness and my pettiness and my tendency that's in the body to divide everything into binaries or this and that, useful or not. I want to just not have that anymore. Wash that down the sink and the great earth will compost it for us. But I'm just wanted to give you a little bit of a taste of how deeply this is embedded in our practice in Soto Zen, and also offer it as a possibility for you during the practice commitment period. We've been gifted by Kelly, and if you haven't gotten one yet, if you're in the practice period, these beautiful journals, handmade. Isn't that amazing? This is like an adornment on our practice period. And the Shivso and Benji are distributing them. So too late to sign up, though. Maybe. Maybe. We'll let a couple squeakers in, maybe. But we can make our own verses up, our own gathas, 4-line, 20-line, 1-line, 1-word, and practice them every day. I would suggest starting with when you wake up in the morning. And then when you go to sleep, those are great times that your mind is a little open. And it's one more. Oh, yeah. I would just want to finish this maybe with reading from this. By the way, there were people at Ancient Dragon reading this sutra aloud with each other every Friday once a month for years. And they just finished it, right, David Ray? Did you do that? Yeah. So they finished it. I've never finished it. I mean, I've read it. Huh? Yeah, I was going to say, I just keep starting over. And now I'm studying it with a teacher where if we get through 3 paragraphs per session, that's a lot. But this says, child of Buddha, this is how it ends. If enlightening beings, bodhisattvas, that means us, if we use our minds in this way, we'll have supremely wonderful qualities, which cannot be dislodged by gods, demons, monks, Brahmins, beasts, or any other religious fanatics, or ice, or whoever. So this is a powerful practice too, and it encourages us to own our wholeness, goodness, and agency, and also our humility. So thank you very much for listening to all this. Some things are going to happen in a minute. Isn't this beautiful? Like the Soto Shu. See how they bind these books? And they're like this. Accordions, you know, adorned. So sadly, I think we'll just not have any discussion. So we can get the show on the road.